The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Coleman throwing more punches now. Maybe this could be the tactic of Ali to let the man punch himself out. 30 seconds left in round 8. Very even fight. Ali, a sneaky right hand. Another sneaky right hand. This time he works over the shoulder of Coleman.
Yes, the 8th round knockout of George Foreman by Muhammad Ali in Zaire, the Rumble in the Jungle, 50 years ago today. Exactly 50 years, half a century since that fight. Michael Carruth, Olympic gold medalist, was watching that fight as a 7-year-old, I understand. We're going to be speaking to Michael about that in just a moment. A man who, I also understand, has met both George Foreman and Muhammad Ali. First, though, Owen Sheehan has popped in ahead of Off the Ball at 7 o'clock. Owen, it is remarkable, that fight, for so many different reasons. Chief amongst them, though, that it's the most famous boxing match in the history of that sport, isn't it?
I think that is absolutely fair comment, but also one of the most famous cultural moments of the 20th century. And I know Michael will probably be able to give you more boxing insight into the fight itself. But for me, when I think about this fight, I think about one of the greatest sports movies ever made, the best sports documentary ever made, in When We Were Kings, the mid-90s that came out, won an Academy Award. And if you could go back in time and be a journalist for one sports event, When We Were Kings is certainly the moment. I mean, it was an all-star cast of writers who followed them out to Zaire at the time to cover this insane sports event that was essentially one of the first instances of sports washing that we can ever remember. If you look back in that documentary, you'll see the likes of George Plimpton and Norman Mailer as talking heads. Hunter S. Thompson was out there covering the fight, but sadly was not used as a talking head in the documentary due to the fact that he actually fell asleep in a drunken state in a swimming pool and missed the fight as a result of, not being fully aware that this thing was about to happen at 4 a.m. in the morning, and that's when the fight did officially commence. So there is all this lore around this, and as I say, if anybody's not seen When We Were Kings, make an appointment viewing.
And what was it that kind of aligned all those stars at this moment? Like, what was it about that fight that attracted all of these writers to Zaire, that attracted the world's attention to it? I mean, Ali fought God knows how many fights. He fought too many fights, by all accounts. You know what I mean? Yet this is the fight. Not the only one, remember, you know, the Thrill in Manila and Sonny Liston and everything as well. But this is the one. This is the fight that's remembered.
I think the very simple answer to your question is Muhammad Ali. He was the most compelling character possibly in the world, sport or non-sport, at that time. And Ali certainly managed to create this culture around himself for this fight where it was something of a homecoming for him. And despite the fact that it was two black fighters in that ring, he managed to completely vilify George Foreman, describing him allegedly as Belgian. So obviously at that time, given their previous conquerors, the natives in Zaire would not have been happy with that. And in the documentary, you hear this constant drumbeat of Ali Bomaye, Ali Bomaye, which translates to Ali, kill him. So Ali obviously was beloved all around the world, but he had this real ability to turn a population against other black fighters, Foreman being one of them, Joe Frazier probably being the greatest example of this, terribly treated by Ali outside of the ring as well as inside the ring, obviously. But there's also this compelling thing that Ali is close to being finished at this point. He's 32 years of age. You've got Foreman, who's only 25, in the peak of his powers. And there is also, again, there's just so much lore around this fight. One of the other stories that often gets told is that apparently there was a private jet waiting for Ali to transport him to a brain surgeon in Lisbon should things have gone badly awry for him on the night. So he was a 4-1 underdog, and obviously he rope-a-doped the great George Foreman in that ring, and in near the end of the 8th round knocked him out.
Oh, so absolutely incredible, even the way it tell-ed, and my own memories of that documentary as well, When We Were Kings. But Michael Carruth is on the line, Olympic gold medalist, of course, in Barcelona. Michael, do you remember watching it?
Yeah, we got up at 7 years old, so we, mum and dad, let us get up, because obviously it was on the weekend, and you know, yeah, didn't have school the next morning, so we went to bed for a couple of hours, and then got us up. And again, the memories you just have as well, like Ali getting in the ring, and as you say, two black fighters fighting against one another. But it was, it didn't seem that way. You know what I mean? Ali had everybody on his side, and I don't know why they portrayed George as being a big bully and things like that, but he was a young lad. He had unbelievable power, and everybody was thinking the same thing, that like if they had a, as you just said there, they had a medic on standby ready for Ali to get hurt, and he truly roped it up, and that's what he's done in that fight, you know? So, and arguably the greatest fight of all time, you know? So.
And when you, Michael, say when you've gone back and watched it since, not as a 7-year-old when you saw it first, but when you watched it since, how would you assess kind of the boxing that was on display?
Ali was taking a lot of punches as well. Like George Foreman was only ever one punch away from did he knock Muhammad Ali out on that night, you know, when you look back at it. But, you know, he got him tired. He walked him down. He got his hands up and... George is a big, big heavyweight as well. Like George is probably an over 20 stone at that stage as well. Muhammad Ali would probably be around 17 or 18 stone. George was a big, big lad, you know, and he had, his fitness wouldn't have been as good as Ali's. His sharpness and his speed wasn't as good as Ali's. He had power. You know, there's no good in having power if you can't use it. And Ali just wore him down and wore him down and wore him down, and that's what he kept doing to him. You know, like, obviously, there was a lot of in-house talking as well during the fight as well that you're not supposed to do, you know what I mean? But Ali had a way of getting around people and getting into their heads, and that's what he's done with George, unfortunately. And George is a lovely person, because I've got to meet the two of them over the last couple of decades, and George is a lovely, lovely person, but like he truly got, again, we'll use the cliche, he got roped to dope, and that was it, you know what I mean? And look at the media attention that fight got back 50 years ago.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it's crazy. You know?
Would you ever slag George Foreman for that fight?
Of course I did, yes. he was in my boxing club a couple of years ago, and we have a big picture of Muhammad Ali, we have a picture of him as well, and George goes over to the how come his is a bigger fighter? And he beat you, that's why. Arguably the greatest boxer of all time, Muhammad Ali. You know, one of the, definitely one, my favourite, you know, of all time.
Where did you meet Ali?
Ali, I met him actually here in Dublin. They brought him over for it was a kind of company thing that brought him over. It was in, and we were in a it was like a theatre type thing, and he was up on the stage, and he was suffering with Parkinson's at the time, and he was shaking, and I was looking at it, and I just said, "I'm not here for this," I said, you know, and I just excused myself from the table that I was. When I was picked to go on, and I said, I'm not here for this. He looks like he's up there. He can't talk. He's shaking. He's down like he is. And it was just like, you know, bringing a racehorse into a stable and having a look at it. You know, he's not going to do anything. You know what I mean? And Muhammad could do nothing. You know what I mean? He couldn't even talk at that stage. You know, so I blame his family as well much for that as well, because they obviously they got as much as they could help him before he passed. You know, and that was it. You know what I mean? So. But again, it wasn't the Muhammad Ali I wanted to meet. You know, very good.
It's remarkable, and like boxing has never seen anything like that since. I mean, it's had kind of flirtations with it, and there was huge popularity on around the kind of say the early Tyson era, the first kind of iteration before he was in prison. Put it that way. But nothing like this. I mean, this was kind of global attention on a single fight.
Absolutely. And also there is also the domino effect of this fight. Like this completely increased the legacy of Muhammad Ali in terms of how he's remembered. It is probably the most iconic moment. But even when you go from Ali, because his reputation is what it is, you look at, say, even the last stages of his career. And as Michael alludes to, there's a couple of very, very sad moments in Ali's career and also in his post-fighting career. And one of the ones that always comes to mind is his penultimate fight against Larry Holmes, when Larry Holmes was distraught, really, to knock him out and to beat him up so badly that night, when clearly even his speech in the ring was going at that stage of his career. But to think Larry Holmes is somebody who fought Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali just shows that there is always this connection, and maybe even Tyson himself was propped up a little bit by the legacy of Muhammad Ali, given that Holmes connection. So, of course, like, I mean, it is, I mean, like, as Michael would absolutely attest to, unfortunately, when it comes to boxing, and certainly in the middle to late stages of the 20th century, unfortunately, there was a case where fighters were absolutely taken advantage of, and everybody involved in this fight, from the dictator Mobutu to Don King, all profiteered quite handsomely off Muhammad Ali, despite the fact that there were the early signs that his health was going to be forever damaged by what was happening.
I was going to ask whether people can transcend sport in the way he did anymore, but to a degree maybe they can. I guess a Messi or a Ronaldo probably, and I'm not suggesting before people start kind of angry texting in that I'm comparing one with the other. But I guess they have kind of transcended sport.
Yeah, and I guess Ali had to do it in a much more difficult way, obviously banned from boxing for multiple years for not going to Vietnam, and being a conscientious objector to that is something that brought him to that level above sport. Ronaldo and Messi certainly have not done that in their career, and that's why Muhammad Ali will always be held up as the one who is bigger than sport. And again, that's not...
And he had to do it in the world where there was only a handful of television channels and radio stations and newspapers. There's no kind of outlet to get your message to the world unless they want you to get your message to the world.
Yeah, getting 1 billion eyeballs on a fight in 1974 was
that's
an absolutely
amazing.
Extraordinary thing.
Yeah, it is. Listen, Owen, thanks a million for joining us. Owen Sheehan from Off the Ball. Michael Carruth, Olympic gold medalist.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.